There are the red lights on. That's a good sign.
Okay. Just to let everybody know, Peter's not going to be here. So, Jerry, have you acted as chairman before? Jerry Bouchard?
Ever from a remote location.
Well,
get your car, come on up here.
I don't know that there's any rules against that, being chairman from a remote location.
Probably not. I just don't know how effective it might be.
Well, we have, not unless we have Mike or, you know, one of the people in the room here act as the chairman.
Well, I could be there in a couple minutes. Can we wait for that?
Yeah, we can do that.
All right, I'll be there in a minute.
I'm going to pause the recording again then.
The recording has stopped.
Yes.
Mr. Bergman.
Yes.
Mr. Duke.
Yes.
Ms. Smith Mathias.
Abstain, I wasn't at the meeting.
Okay. Mr. Shaver.
Abstain.
And Mr. Siebel.
Yes.
And I will vote yes as well. Okay, so that is 5 votes in the affirmative and 2 abstentions. Okay. Agenda. This notice about COVID?
I suppose. Technically speaking, yes.
Sure. It's on our planning board, June 21st, 2021. Please take notice, effective immediately and based upon notices and health advisories issued by federal, state, and local officials related to the COVID-19 virus. Planning Board will conduct a public hearing via video conferencing as permitted by the New York State Open Meetings Law and Executive Order 202.1. Due to public health and safety concerns, the public will not be permitted to attend at the remote locations where its board members, department heads, or staff will be situated or in any other location. The public will be able to fully observe the video conference meeting and will be able to comment during the public hearing. Please take further notice that the materials for the public hearing are available on the town's website at www.townofmorello.org. Please take further notice that comments for the public comment portion or public hearings can be sent through the Zoom video conferencing of the meeting. Okay. That being said, first tonight on our agenda is Baker Falls Solar, 1015 Electric Drive, site plan review.
Yeah, this is Travis Mitchell for NextAmp. What's the board's preference? Do you want me to share the screen or do we just run through it and decide as we go?
I would think share the screen. That would seem effective when I was on.
Okay, so give me a second here to catch up with me, Travis.
Yeah, no worries.
So you're now a co-host.
Before, from what you've seen, we had proposed access into the site here that required an easement along the property line from the town of Morrell and another parcel. And we've decided to go down to an access point here, which doesn't require any easements from the town. I'll show you the subsequent slide. You can see a paper street that runs right up to the power line corridor, which runs right through here. Other than that, there haven't been any changes to our site plan. Again, the drawings that you have tonight that we submitted last month show that revised access location. And this is the overall, just for some perspective so you can see what I'm talking about, I showed the original access location, which is shown to the right on the screen there. And then the current one, I don't know if you can see on the screen, it's a little bit light, but you can make out the paper street that comes off of Farnham Road up to the power lines. Everything else remains the same, 7-foot-high perimeter fence surrounding the solar farm with about 13.5 acres of fenced area. There's a single electrical equipment pad where the centralized inverter and transformer equipment is located. The access into the site, there is some 20 feet wide right at the entrance off Harlem Road, tapers to 15 and then tapers to 12 feet wide once you get into the site. We were here originally in April, back again in May. I know that the planning board had some questions about technical review and decommissioning plan, and I think this is one of the first, if not the first, solar project that the planning board has seen. We did receive just last week a request for an additional escrow amount to have some additional technical review done, I think primarily on the decommissioning plan. That NextAmp has started the process to get that check cut, so we don't have no issue with that. We did receive back on June 11th a stormwater sign-off from LaBerge. They've reviewed the stormwater on this already, and that did include the revised access road. So we should be set with stormwater, and we should be moving forward with the rest of the technical review of the decommissioning plan and other application material that you had asked for. So on site plan, I believe public hearing at the discretion of the board. I assume with projects like this that you'll want to have one. If that is the case, we'd ask to consider having that scheduled. Of course, if you don't want to have one, we won't object. Any questions or any questions that we can answer?
According to my notes, the major outstanding issue was retention of a technical review entity, and we did get a letter from LaBerge. The town board has authorized our access to them to serve that function. So they provided a letter. I think I sent it out to everybody. It's for those services, and they referenced the idea of a $3,200 fee for the basis for an escrow account, as Travis had mentioned. So that's where we're at with that component. I think that's a critical need given the decommissioning plan that's been received and the technical aspects related to that. I think it would be good to have some guidance relating to that, review that plan on behalf of the town and the board. And then there's also the open question of a public hearing, whether or not you'd like to schedule one. We can certainly do that. So those are the two primary things that are open on this, according to my notes.
And this is Travis again. I did forward the escrow amount to Mike Cucciar and his team, and they have initiated the process to get a check cut to the town. And Mike just unmuted himself. He can speak to that, but it should be this week.
All right, Travis. I was going to say it will be there before Friday, so on Friday.
This is John. While Mike's not actually on here, do you have does your company have experience working with these tracker panels in the Northeast?
Yes, we do. I'd say vast majority of actually our New York State portfolio has trackers. I'd have to get back to you on the exact number, but because initially when we started our first construction project, they were mostly fixed tilt, but the trackers that we've been using, we're comfortable, we're plans and projects with them on there, and I know maybe the concern is that operating them in the Northeast would be a challenge, but so far we have several up and running and many more in construction at this point.
Okay. I was only asking because somebody I know at Night Service said that they thought that they were a little bit of a challenge in our region. They work really great in other areas, but they didn't say they were impossible. They just said that they can be a bit of a challenge, maintenance and mechanically. Other questions on the project? Do you guys have the right of way through or across the National Grid property at this point?
We do not.
Go ahead, Mike.
Well, Travis, maybe fill in the blanks there, but Travis and Liza, my colleague, have been working on putting together that application, which we've done several times before National Grid. So, Travis, I don't know if you have an update on that.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, yeah, we just, within this last submittal, made the decision to go to the southern access road location. We're across the grid line, so we've got that queued up and ready to submit to National Grid. I would, of course, expect that to be a condition of your approval, but we have not made the submission yet. Should probably be in the next week or so that gets made.
Well, the previous road would have also crossed their line.
Yep. Oh yeah, no, it would. We would need the same type permit. It just until we made the firm decision to go with this location, we hadn't submitted that permit yet, just because we didn't have the location nailed out.
Okay, and the third question I had is, on the map I have page C300C on the packet you sent out. I have a hashed out area of land in front of the solar panels between the power line and the panels. That I can't find anything in the legend that tells me what it is. It's to the right of the driveway or the access way.
Yep, so that I think is going to be a construction staging area, and I will make sure that gets labeled on your plan. But
that's what I have to read.
Yeah, it's just a temporary, so we lay down gravel there. That's just to stage the equipment as it comes in, and then it gets pulled back up. In fact, on C400, there is a label kind of right on the power line easement that points to that.
Okay, all right. So that area won't be impervious afterwards?
That's correct. It will not.
You put cloth down and then the gravel, and then you take it back up afterwards. Will it be replanted? Because I know right now it's kind of a green strip there.
Yeah, the plan is perfectly. Anything like that gets replanted. Yeah.
I don't really care. I'm just asking them.
Yep. No, that's a process.
The only other comment I have is I honestly, as a board member, would like to see a public hearing on this. I think we do public hearings on our industrial park in general. And in all honesty, I think I actually like this project. I like its location, and I like what it does with our industrial park. So I would like this one to have a public hearing for a positive reason. Okay, so if the chairman wants to know my input on that, that's my input. I believe a public hearing is warranted, and I believe that it would be a good thing.
This is Ann. I agree with John. I do think a public hearing is warranted for this, and as John, I also support solar power generally. The other thing is that I think prior to there being a public hearing, we should hear back from the consultant and its review of the plans and such. We would do the same, I think, if this was a private landowner as opposed to the town. Yeah. And I also think we should see an implementation agreement relative to the decommissioning and the O&M plans together with the security that is being proposed. And I guess lastly, I just have a question as to whether the town at this point has reached an agreement with Baker Solar, subject to the planning board's approval of the site plan. Anybody know?
I'm sorry.
In what manner, Anne?
Have they agreed to terms of a lease or a sale of property?
See, I don't think the town owns this property. Do they, Travis?
No, like, maybe you can speak to this, but this is owned by the Marona Show Park Ground, correct?
Is it the LLC owned by the town?
It is. No.
Oh, it is not? Who owns the LLC?
That is Marona Industrial Park LLC. It's separate from the town. There are town parcels within the park, but these are privately owned.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Perhaps the confusion was maybe early on with the original original asset when we were proposing in the town's approval, but we since have switched. To answer a little bit more of your question, I don't think the town has approved anything on the income or O&M. We have sent it their way, and we have not had subsequent discussions.
Oh, okay.
We didn't initiate anything with the technical review until the board met tonight and signed off on it. I didn't want to start that process until the board was up to speed.
Okay, I apologize for my confusion. I did think that the LLC for the industrial park was owned by the town, but these are separate lots, they're not town owned. That's fine. But I still stick with the view that we should have some understanding that the underlying landowner is agreeable to the project.
And I think, Mike, you can probably provide some type of agreement with the Marona Industrial Park, correct?
Sure. I mean, I prefer it not to be put on the website, but if the town needed proof or evidence of a lease in place, I can certainly provide that. That's possible. Is that your?
Yeah, I think that under our draft solar power law, which Grant is not in force yet, at least required that there be some evidence that the owner of the site was agreeable to the project.
Okay. Would a letter suffice in that case from the principals?
Yes.
I would think so.
Yes, okay. A letter would suffice.
Okay.
Matter of fact, I'd rather not have a copy of the agreement in the file.
Yep.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that.
And relative to, or really the board in general, relative to scheduling the public hearing and review of the documents, if we might ask that the board consider scheduling that for next month in anticipation that a review will be forthcoming here over the next couple of weeks, and if it doesn't, we can always hold the public hearing and hold it over until August, if you consider that.
Travis, do you expect that in 2 weeks?
It's not. So the stormwater review is already done. It feels like, and maybe Jim can speak to it, but it feels like it's a pretty light lift for this review. And we haven't changed the plan here much in the last couple months. Go ahead.
My intention, if this is a go with using LaBerge in that capacity, is to send. I think they have the site plan already by virtue of their stormwater review, and then to send the decommissioning plan and the O&M plan on to them for review and comment in that technical capacity.
And what was your sense, Jim? Is it something they can turn around in 2 weeks to be the right timing for the public hearing?
I would be surprised if we didn't have their comments by the next planning board meeting. If I send it off tomorrow, they have almost a full month, so I can't imagine they wouldn't have their comments back in time. But I can get a schedule from them and confirm.
But I guess the thing, my concern is I don't like calling for a public hearing and then not being able to hold it. That makes me uncomfortable. To the same degree, I don't want to delay a public hearing on this. So I just wanted to know if there was a really good, solid feeling that 2 weeks was reasonable.
And this is Ann. I frankly would prefer to see the results of their review and have an opportunity to raise questions and get some answers to that before a public hearing. I know we've got like draft decommissioning plan and draft O&M plan, but ultimately I think we need to see a written agreement that's enforceable to ensure that those obligations are performed along with some type of security which we can rely on to see that those obligations are performed.
This is Mike Nexamp. As it relates to decommissioning plan and O&M plan, I would say, you know, in other municipalities we have had sort of a conditioned approval where, you know, agreements would need to be in place before a building permit is accepted or provided. But I just wanted to point it out there. I mean, we would be open to that as a potential solution just to keep things moving, but just my 2 cents there.
Board have a sense?
Well, I mean, aside from those two things, the only other thing I see outstanding right now is access to the site over the National Grid property.
Which would seem like that's an easy condition if we got to the end and that wasn't. That was the last thing, right?
I mean, it would seem like an easy condition, except for, I don't know in my years of being on this town planning board, if I've ever seen National Grid come through in the end with a contract right of way across the power line. Right away.
Right.
On any project. Yeah. I really don't. So I would assume that they would be okay with it. And if there's anybody that has a feeling for it, it would probably be you guys. I could think right offhand of at least 4 projects where we've asked for a right of that, as far as I know, has never been granted. I've never seen it. So, I mean, I'm okay with scheduling a public hearing if you think that we can get our reviews back in 2 weeks. I'm not really thrilled with getting handed an engineering review like 2 days before a meeting or the night of the meeting. I don't think that gives us enough time to really do justice as far as reading it and referring to it. But I'm definitely, in this particular case, what we're asking for a review on, I don't think I'm okay with having it. A contingent approval based on, I'd like to see the review before we move forward on an approval. We can have a public hearing, though, I would think, without that. But I would like to have the information ahead of time if we could. So that's why I asked, is it probable that we'll see that in 2 weeks?
And John, what I'd say is that the decommissioning plans are fairly standardized these days in what we see from project to project. So, you know, certainly need to have your consultant take a look and provide comments. But I'd be surprised if there were many substantive comments. And what I'd say is, if the board's willing to schedule a public hearing, if you don't receive the comments, you know, 2 weeks out with sufficient notice, we can open the public hearing, get it started, and then just hold it over until next month to give everyone time to be comfortable with it.
I've just got a question for Michael, and maybe Travis, you'll know. On the decommissioning plan, isn't this something that's ultimately signed by the supervisor as the chief elected officer of the town, and the town board has to accept it?
Yeah, so that is something I need to check. I believe that is true, that it is approved by the town board, but I do need to refer back to the local law here.
Because,
and
then if that's the case, then you can see where I'm going with this, that, you know, the planning board may think this is the greatest plan in the world, but the actual board that's got to accept it and sign it hasn't seen it yet. So.
Yeah, in most instances, that's the case. The town board reviews the decommissioning plan and the form of surety. But as Mike said, I don't have that local law right in front of me either to know if Moreau is different. But most of the time, that is to the planning board as part of the process, but then ultimately the town board reviews it.
This is Ann. I don't think we have anything that requires town board approval. We do not have a solar law in effect
Well, I don't think you need one, Ann. My point is, Ann, you can't have the town commit to something because the planning board authorized it. Only the town board can do that.
If I read the minutes from last month, Carla had said that we are, in that case, we are simply making a recommendation to the town
board. So what does the town board approve?
They approve the decommissioning plan. You guys can look at it and make a recommendation, but it's really not binding. The binding nature is the town board authorizes the supervisor to sign the plan. So my point is we have to have two boards review here, not just one. And so therefore it would be a good idea to coordinate this on a parallel track. So as a
our position is just approximates. We're not approving the decommissioning plan, we're just advising them.
I think that's
correct.
Correct
on that? Okay. All right. Okay.
So that would be the case even if you were talking about private landowner?
Correct. Because if there's something like a form of security that has to be accepted by the town, only the town board can do that on behalf of the town.
Okay, and then so how does the planning board register its comments?
I think in the minutes, and even by a resolution, I would say by a resolution. So you authorize by resolution, you pass a recommendation on to the town board with a series of recommendations or concerns.
There's something in our code that says that.
Not that I can think of. The only thing that put this in my head was I know that only the town board can commit the town to do something and execute an agreement.
So if somebody could please help me with it, Mike might be able to, because they've done a lot of megawatts of solar, so I'm sure they've run into this decommissioning thing in the past. Is there some reason why solar installations are unique in requiring a decommissioning plan upon approval of development of them?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. I don't know if it's set up, but I'm one of the same things as myself.
You said, I don't know, and then it was garbled. Could you repeat that, please?
Sorry, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. I was just saying, I wonder that myself sometimes. I feel like sometimes solar projects are put under a little bit more scrutiny than any other type of development, but I guess I have my own bias. There is nothing inherent in the solar project that would necessarily necessitate a decommissioning bond, except for the fact that it's a new technology, and I guess maybe there are concerns from other types of installations, maybe cell phone towers, things like that, where there has been decommissioning required for wind turbines, etc. But nothing in my view that would necessarily necessitate it. To the fact, though, that we do have a 25 to 40 year lease, so it is not an infinite period of time that we will be on that property.
I think in answer to that question, because I've looked at these in the past, it's been a long time, but I have looked at them in the past, I think decommissioning plans do occur with other forms of power generation. However, like if you have a natural gas plant, they're typically multi-megawatt, 25, 30, 50, 100 megawatt plants, and the decommissioning plans are much more complicated and involved. And they also occur at a much higher level with, like, the Public Service Commission or New York State or something like that. So I think decommissioning plans do exist, but given the fact that, solar, especially these days, has been under that threshold of 25 megawatts, they occur at the local level rather than at those higher levels of government.
So Jeff, just so I can be clear, is it that these are not permanent structures that we're concerned about their end of time disposition? Is that the idea? It's not because they're normally abandoned or have a history of being abandoned. It's more a matter of because they have a finite period of usefulness that we need to know what's going to be done with them at the end of that time period.
I think it can be either, John. I mean, just because, you know, there hasn't been a history of abandonment doesn't necessarily mean that it can't happen, and therefore it's a scenario that you shouldn't plan for. So I think it can be either instance. The technology just ages out, so to speak, or, you know, something happens with the provider and they go out of business or they go bankrupt, whatever, and the equipment's just left there in the landscape. I think it's planning for either scenario. So.
Okay, so the reason I ask this is because this we've now been educated tonight that this is not property that's owned by the town. It's owned by the industrial park, which I didn't realize there was a separate entity that owned the property in the park, but okay. So this is private property. So if for some reason Nexamp decides to sell this facility or this installation to another manager who then turns into another one, and eventually it gets abandoned and we have to fall back on that reclaiming bond or whatever, would the landowner also be responsible for it since it's on his land or on their land?
I think that's an excellent question. I think that's a very good question, and either one for LaBerge or Carla to address that.
Okay. All right. I'm just wondering, you're helping me. This is all new stuff for me. So.
Because I think what's happening, and Mike probably knows from Nexamp, knows the state is about to take over the process for large solar generators, 25 megawatts and higher. Correct?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. I mean, it was there in a different form, but the new 94C Office of Renewable Energy Siting is for those much larger projects and, you know, does encompass everything from permitting to decommissioning, et cetera.
Because that's like, I worked on a natural gas plant once, and it was, I think, a 30 megawatt or something like that, and I remember there was all these decommissioning plans and things like that to go through. But it was at a higher level of government.
Yep, you're correct.
When a case like that, is New York State then the final responsible party at end of use to facilitate all of the decommissioning and all? Is that?
I believe so, yes.
All right. All right, well, thank you. I'm learning more every time, so I appreciate it. So as to if you'd like us to, as to the public hearing, we have a right-of-way we're waiting for, a review of the decommissioning plan, a review of the lease. Is that the other thing that we're looking for?
Yeah.
Just
if the property owner is allowing of this use.
You know. Okay, but there were two reviews. There were two reviews, Jim. What was the second review?
I have down here the operation and maintenance plan and the decommissioning plan.
Right, the O&M plan. Okay, so then if we have a good feeling from the applicant and from you that these reviews can be to us in 2 weeks, would the chairman entertain a motion to set a public hearing for next month at 7:01 for the Nexamp project at Baker Falls Solar Electric Drive?
I think the night is July 19th.
Okay, thank you. I didn't have the calendar in front of me.
Okay, we have a motion to set a public hearing for July 19th, 2021. At what time, John?
7:01.
7:01 p.m. Okay.
With everybody in the room.
Yeah. Are you making that contingent, John, upon receiving the submittals in 2 weeks?
Well, I think Travis said we could go ahead with the public hearing, and if we didn't have those, we could always open the public hearing, do what we can, and then move on.
We have to get the wheels in motion, and you know, we have to be 10 days prior and all that, so once we start doing this here at our the office, we gotta, it's gotta, it's cast in stone, so to speak. Because the notice has to go out.
This is the first time we're reviewing a project of this type. It'll be the first time we see a report from a consultant like LaVerge on a project of this type. I really do think that if we have an extra month, it's not going to, you know, be the end of the world, but I think Empower is better to assess what's going on and make appropriate decisions.
I don't disagree with anything that anybody said so far. I think we just, as a matter of order, we have a motion in front of the board. I will entertain, is there a second to the motion? I'm hearing none. I'll wait just a second in case someone online has it out. I'm hearing no second to the motion. Okay.
Okay, my motion falls.
Yep. Okay. Board, I guess at this point, we are still waiting then for the reviews to be completed so that we have an opportunity to review the results. And then at next month's meeting, if we have received that information, we can look to schedule a public hearing at that point.
Well, just to let everybody know what I'm going to do now, is I'm going to go off and authorize the boards as soon as we get the check comes. But I'm going to try and keep both boards now, the planning board and the town board, on a parallel track here in their respective reviews of the information going back and forth between LaVerge and the town. And so hopefully when we come back together here, the town board and the planning board are roughly at the same point of understanding, you know, about the decommissioning plan and the technical comments we get back from our consultant.
Okay, thank you.
Sounds good.
Okay, is there anything for the applicant? Any questions before we part ways for the evening?
No, I think we're set. Thank you for your time tonight.
Okay, Travis, good night. Before we move on to the next item on this month's agenda, I think we probably have a little bit of business we got to take care of. Last month, the first thing we did was we tabled the Jacoby Farms public hearing until this month. So I think we may need to do that again because there's no Jacoby Farms this month. Jim, do you think that's...
I'm sorry, I was concentrating. I thought you were speaking to the board.
Now, last month, we tabled the Jacoby Farms public hearing until this month. Well, now it's this month, and they're still not on the agenda. So I think we need another motion to move it out again another month.
Yeah, just to let... My understanding is they're trying to pull together a meeting with the supervisor or a town board member, Carla, and LaVerge, because they're the engineer for the sewer expansion, in regards to the town board's motion requiring projects within a half mile of the district to hook onto the sewer. So I was waiting for that meeting, and even the applicant led me to believe that's what they were waiting for as well, although I've been getting a lot of questions from Joe Danable, the applicant's representative from EDP, as to, you know, when are we going to be on the agenda? So it doesn't matter to me one way or the other, but I just don't, from my perspective, I don't see this going very far until the sewer connection issue is resolved.
That seems reasonable to me. I don't know what the right, I mean, I just know we tabled it until this month. So it's sitting there, and here it is. So I think it's a... Just as a bookkeeping, or, you know, just keeping ourselves in order.
Right.
We need it. I don't know. Does it just need to go out 1 month, or do we table it until? until they inform the board.
Well, the problem is too that, or not a problem per se, but just the reality is, you know, now we have to go out and re-notice everybody again. There's a cost to that. There's, you know, work associated with that. I don't mind doing it, obviously, when we have earnest interest in a public hearing, but just to do this on a contingency basis each and every month, that does get a little costly and time-consuming. And additionally, and probably more importantly, it's got to be very confusing to the public if we keep on sending out public hearing notices and then we keep tabling it. So,
agreed. So that's what I'm asking. What is?
I would rather wait until we get firm resolution and an indication from the applicant that, you know, they have a configuration now that they can go forward with. Whether it's sewer or septic.
I just know that we had a public hearing scheduled for last month, and we have not conducted it, of course.
Right.
So as long as everybody's comfortable with the tabling it to this month, and then we just don't worry about retabling, it's fine. I'm good to move forward. I just want to make sure we weren't leaving anything hanging. Some sort of a problem with timing for the applicant at some point. You know, I just want to make sure we're not the cause.
No, I'm kind of in a nebulous spot here. I don't know. I mean, technically speaking, we can reschedule a public hearing and re-notice it for the July meeting. There is somewhat of a risk, I think, but maybe it's a small one, that, you know, they're not ready. They did say through Joe Daniel they want to be on for July. I can tell you that much.
Well, then they need to make the decision whether they're going to hook to the sewer or not, right? So if they hook to it, there's no reason why they cannot be on. Correct?
Go ahead, John.
You keep saying that they're pushing to be on the agenda. Right? And I guess I had some questions last month on this, but if the idea is that they have to look into the town laws passed, consumed, been approved, they have to look into a sewer district, are they prepared to move ahead with a plan that includes hooking into the sewer district, or are they trying to push to move ahead with the plan with the septics that they already proposed?
I think they're, by virtue of Joe Daniel has told me as their agent, they're moving forward with the septic proposal. But I don't know how that can be in consideration of the town board resolution that passed that said all projects within a half mile of the district have to hook on. And I think Carla agrees that her interpretation of the what's happened is that they have to hook in.
Okay, so here's my take on this. If Carla, who's our attorney, says that this is legal and that they have to comply, if they want to be on the agenda, they already have a public hearing scheduled. We can open the public hearing, and when they propose something that doesn't tie into the sewer, we can say it doesn't follow current town law, they'll have to go talk to the town board.
Well, that's actually what they're doing. They're trying to schedule a meeting, I think, sometime this week to do that. They retain counsel, and they're trying to schedule that meeting this week to do that very thing.
And I guess my position on is that then we probably should retable it this month, because obviously they're not on for this month, and then see what comes of that town board meeting, right?
Well, the problem is under that scenario, you can't schedule a public hearing until the July meeting for August. If you want to schedule a public hearing and have us notice it for July, I will do that. If you want to wait until July and schedule it for August, I will do that too. It's with either whatever, you know, route you want to take, I will do it.
All right, well, I don't know how we move forward as a planning board when we have an application that doesn't fit with our current code. And we know it doesn't fit with our current code, if that is the case, this is now our current code. Until they get something from the town through their attorney and the courts that say that it's not, That's what we have to go forward with, right? That is our recommendation from our town attorney.
That's
is that this is the new law of the land, and they have to find.
When I spoke with Carl about this, he said that the town board resolution has to be complied with.
Then I would go in a position that we can't schedule a public hearing for a project that does not fit our code, and we know it doesn't.
He's right.
Right?
Correct.
And certainly, your prerogative as a board to do that, and I understand. I wish I could guide you better on this, Scott. I'm hearing one thing from the applicant, you know, that they want to be on the agenda, but yet the major issue has not been resolved yet, and that is wastewater. And I don't see how it can be resolved other than to comply with the town board resolution.
Okay.
Well, I would say that my personal seat of the pants farmer position is they may have a case to bring it in front of the town and argue it. I expressed my concerns on that last month, but unfortunately at the moment, we as a board have to look at the code as we're told it is.
It
is a certain way, and we have to work from that, right?
Yeah, totally agree, John. Can we just stay focused on the task at hand? If I could just ask you to stay focused rather than debate this whole thing. I just want to make sure we had a public hearing scheduled for tonight for this project. It's not occurring. Is it enough to just do we cancel it? What do we have to do in order to make sure that we have a public hearing tonight? We're not going to conduct it. Are we going? Does it just fall aside and it goes? It just ceases to exist. Or do we need to take some action in order to continue it or end it? That's all. I just want to make sure.
You need to take an act. You need to take action if you want to continue it.
So by not continuing it's they have to reapply. They have to come in front of us again and request a public hearing.
That's my position. Yes, especially in consideration of the recent turn of events on this sewer issue. I think so.
Okay.
Because we don't have, you're supposed to go to a public hearing with an accurate portrayal of the project. And I don't know that I understand that right now.
All right. Then what I would like to do is, just to the board, I'll follow the example of our chairman, Mr. Jensen, who last month asked if anyone wanted to put forth a motion to table the public hearing and renotice it. So I will ask the same question of the board. Does anyone want to put forth a motion to table the Jacoby Farms subdivision public hearing that was scheduled for 7:01 p.m. tonight?
I'm going to say yes, Gary.
You want to make a motion to reschedule?
Okay. The public hearing, not a little, I won't go deep on this, but we have a public hearing for it tonight, but it's not on our agenda. So that was a mistake. It should have been listed on our agenda as being a public hearing.
No, I don't want to characterize that as a mistake. At least from my standpoint, I consciously did not put that on the agenda because we had no updated project plan. I don't know whether the unit count's going to change now. I consciously left that off the agenda because of the occurrence with the sewer policy from the town board changing dramatically, and then no subsequent indication from the applicant that they're going to comply or not comply. They're trying to figure this out with the town. I consciously left that off the agenda because we could not portray to the public an accurate representation of that project.
I would say it's complete.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
But we did not put out another notice for a public hearing tonight for Jacoby.
No, we did not.
For most part, when the public heard that this project had been tabled with the applicant's consent, it's kind of like an indefinite, I think, deferral of action on them.
Exactly.
Pardon?
Exactly.
So it wasn't an agreement to have a public hearing tonight. So I think that we probably don't need to take any further action other than decide among ourselves whether we want to schedule a public hearing for next month, undertake the time and expense to get that set up, fearing that perhaps an agreement is not going to be reached and the plans are not going to be revised to meet the current town requirements.
That sounds like a good approach.
So it sounds like we don't have to do anything other than to acknowledge that's the current status, that it was tabled without with applicant consent last month, deferred without any action, and that we are still awaiting some indication from the applicant and the town that there's some reasonable basis for going forward. I don't think that takes a resolution.
No,
well, the only concern I have is Jim's telling us that the applicant is asking for it.
Well, that, I'm confused, John, and I'm not saying you're doing it, I'm confused by the applicant, because on the one hand, the applicant himself indicated to me that he just wanted to hold off until he could figure this out with the town board, and then his agent is asking me to be on the agenda, and I'm getting mixed messages out of the applicant themselves.
Then why don't we just
I'll defer to the board whatever they want to do, though. I think I know what the applicant's attempting to do, and I understand it, but I think I'll defer to the board whatever the board decides is reasonable.
I think we should just wait till the issue's resolved, whether we're going to go.
Meredith or Ann, I thought verbalized it very well. As long as everybody's comfortable that tabling until tonight, that continues along, that we're still good, I'm good with that. I just want to make sure we didn't leave anything open. That was the only intent of the comment. I didn't mean to imply anybody did anything wrong.
I'm just confused. I don't. We're waiting to get some bearing on this sewer issue.
Well, then, at that point, then I mean, unless someone has an objection to it, I think we move on.
I agree.
I'm fine with that.
All right. I apologize for the diversion. All right, let's get on to the next thing on the agenda. Keep this rolling. Otherwise, you're going to replace me. Next on the agenda is the Deno subdivision on Reynolds Road, a sketch plan review.
Okay, Gary, I'm allowing you to talk. Gary, are you there? Gary?
What? I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. The alarm clock went off.
Can you unmute Mark Stewart if he's on?
I did.
Okay, fantastic. So I'm Gary Robinson, consulting engineer. I represent Dental Contracting. We were here, I think the last time we were here, we had a sketch plan that looked a little different than this one. They're proposing a cul-de-sac. The owner looked into what the size of the lots would be, what the cost of everything would be, how it would impact stormwater, a myriad of different things, and decided that probably wasn't going to work. So what we propose this month in a resubmission of a sketch plan is to have four lots that would be serviced by a common driveway that would come off Reynolds Road near the hydrant that's actually existed on Reynolds Road, and it would run up into the subdivision, and all of the driveways that went to the individual lots would be off that common driveway. We have an agreement, draft agreement, that we had done before for one for five lots. We have now one that's for this type of layout, which is different, and this is for the four lots. Since we were here, we also have been out in the field and completed perk tests and test pits. they were witnessed by the town and the county. And what we found, we had a little chart on the plan, but we found that the groundwater buried elevation 227.5 to elevation 226.5. And we've also added, so you can understand that, we've also added 2-foot contours on the site that we're taking from the Saratoga County website. So what we've come up with is we've come up with the 4-lot layout. Another thing that we did that's a little different from before is we were not able to, on lot 2 and lot 3, we're going to give some of the property to a boundary line agreement, and some of that property would move to an adjacent owner, and that wasn't able to be completed by the time we submitted it. So we show that as a future agreement to be made, and we have limited the buildable area to where that boundary line, future boundary line, would be. On the plan itself, on each lot, we've come up with an elevation of a minimum surface elevation that we need for septic systems. And we essentially have a little loop around where we've looked at the development being. Of course, it's just it's what we project could happen. Somebody could want a house in a different location and the garage and had no garage or whatever. But we did it. We showed something so that we could, it would be easy to see that things could happen on the site. The lots are big enough to get things done. As far as the stormwater is concerned, that was one of the reasons. That was one of the reasons that Saratoga County was out with us. I did talk to Blue Niels. I don't know if everyone's familiar with him. He's kind of the stormwater guru in Saratoga County. And he does agree that it wouldn't need to be a full SWIP. It's actually, I think it's similar to what McKenna did, in that it meets all the requirements for having a limited SWIP. And he said it should be a limited SWIP. So what we've done is the limited SWIP is now included as page 2 and page 3. We've done this a few times before. In fact, I think one of them was Murrah. And then we've added details for the stormwater system, or I'm sorry, septic systems, which is on sheet 4. I think that's pretty much an update of where we are. And if anybody had any questions, you have to help out.
Gary, I just wanted to make sure I understand what you said right back from the very beginning of this. Something about doing the perk test and the test pits and water lines and all, and you were talking about 326-foot, 328-foot marks, and that's all I'm seeing on the contours here. So I obviously misunderstood it, because it sounded like you were saying that the water, groundwater, is at ground level.
It's not at ground level. If you look at the chart on sheet 1,
yes.
It talks about where the mountain depth was. So the mountain depth is MD, under the MD.
Yes.
It lists it for each of the lots. So that was the elevation that we saw modeling at each of those two lots.
You're going to have to raise up the locations for the septic and for the homes themselves. You're not digging basements.
That's right. The town has a requirement that the foundation, from the bottom of the foundation, has to be 2 feet above seasonal high groundwater.
So, right.
So you see what that means. That's what we put in there, that FBE is the footing base elevation. So you can see that the footing bases are all pretty much at grade or a little above grade.
Okay. Next question.
Yes.
Looking at this site, in this map that I have, page 1 of, or sheet 1 of 4.
Yes.
Okay. It appears to me that I'm looking at least a 6-lot subdivision.
It would be a 4-lot subdivision.
No, I see 4 lots that are proposed to be developed.
Yes.
But I see a future lot line thing that you're saying isn't going to happen, so that brings it down. That's still just lot 2 in the top left corner, right?
Right, that piece will be part of lot 2 at this point in time, yes.
In the future, that would be another. But then I'm seeing a portion in the bottom right corner next to the pond overflow and existing pond site.
Right.
It's a lot on 197.
That's not our property. Our property is where the property lines are.
So Gary, this parcel has already been subdivided to only include lots 1, 2, 3, and 4, that portion of the land for this proposed site plan.
That's right.
So at the moment, there's a deed that doesn't include that lot on 197 to the east of lot 4 with this parcel.
That's correct.
So we're not making that lot, it just already exists on its own.
That lot exists, yes.
Okay. All right, my mistake, because I didn't see I don't have a sheet here that tells me property owners. So I'm kind of guessing. I know the lots up above all 3 Fox Drive were subdivided about 10 years ago.
Yes.
Right?
That's true.
I also know that there was one huge parcel, not huge, there was one parcel between that and 197 that included the existing stormwater pond and the pond overflow pitch. And it included other property. So that's why I'm just trying to clear this up. So we are only looking at what's shown on the map as lots 1, 2, 3, 4, and that other little corner that's being future developed as part of lot 2. So it's only a 4 lot.
It is only a 4 lot. And you're correct on lot 2. Includes that little piece up there, which won't be a lot in the future. It'll be a boundary line adjustment, and that lot would go to one of the adjoining.
Of course.
Okay, and the same on lot 3.
Okay.
On lot 3, if you go over toward the pond and you come west or left from the existing pond, there's a dashed line. It's the same thing. We actually own over to the east of the pond. And in the future, that lot would be a boundary line agreement, and that lot would be attached to the adjacent lot. But those agreements haven't been done yet. They haven't been completed yet. So if they're not...
All right, so to be clear, Gary, the existing pond is part of the stormwater management for the Great Fox Drive.
I don't know if there's actually a line that goes down there, but it is part of drainage for, yes, things that are upstream of that pond. I don't believe there's a culvert.
I know that when we did a subdivision off Great Fox Pond. No, but when we did the drainage when we did the stormwater for the subdivision off Great Fox Drive, I know that it was told to us that pond in the back that was owned by the developer at the time was part of the stormwater for managing the stormwater from that subdivision.
And I think
and now it's being proposed to be tied to a building lot. Okay, so now it's being proposed to be tied into building lot number 3 is going up on the stormwater on for Great Fox Drive.
At this point, that would be correct.
I don't know that it's normal for the town to allow stormwater or a development to be owned by some other property.
And
do we have any other projects that we allow that?
Well, right now, I think, I don't know of any, but I mean, right now it is, right? I mean, that wasn't required to be a parcel that it didn't have an easement or it wasn't a separate parcel when Great Fox Drive was done.
No.
So, I mean, it's on this parcel, which is 5+ acres. And so, I mean, it's going to be the same as it was previously. It won't change.
So who's going to own the existing stormwater pond when after the four-lot subdivision is approved without health department interference, and it is no longer necessary to avoid the five-lot subdivision issue, and it gets a future boundary agreement? Who's going to own that existing pond stormwater?
And I think Mark can better address that than me.
So basically, when we purchased the land, Gardner Condon, who was the original owner before this, he owns that small little box, which would be to the southeast corner of the existing pond. It's his own deed, and he has obviously the right of way for the pond overflow. So the future boundary line agreement is going to be getting deeded back to Gardner, attached to that small section D, where he'll continue to have his 40-foot right-of-way with the pond overflow, and then that new proposed future boundary line.
How wide is the lot there with the pond overflow? That narrow lot. That's what it's going to be attached to?
That small little section there that's at the bottom of the 328, that's my understanding. It has its own deed, and I couldn't tell you what it is. That was agreed upon years ago.
Like, Jim is leading to where I was going with this, because if we approve this as a four-lot subdivision, and then somebody comes back and wants to do a two-lot subdivision to disconnect the existing pond and reapply it to Gardner Condon's little box in the corner there, we'll be creating a lot with no frontage on any public road.
Correct, but wouldn't that be their frontage is on the frontage is on the right of way of that pond overflow?
No, because that's a separate
40-foot.
Property. That's a separate property. And how wide is that pond overflow strip? I'm going to take a guess.
Working at it.
Look, it's not 50 feet.
No, I don't think it's 50 feet.
Okay, so we can create that.
I guess what I'm looking at, John, is I don't see that it's going to be any different than it is now. Right now, Gardner owns, or the existing pond is on a private lot. And what we're proposing to do is put it in to a private lot that is the small lot to the east, southeast.
Yeah, the big difference is, Gary, right now you have a 5-acre lot that is compliant. It has proper frontage on 149, albeit a flag-shaped lot. It has proper frontage.
Yep.
What's going to happen is, and that gets sliced off, and that little trapezoidal non-conforming lot absorbs all that property. It's creating a larger non-conforming.
Yes, I agree with you there.
And you can't do that.
And it's also a 5-lot subdivision. We're just finding a sneaky way to do the 4 lots with the remaining lands thing.
So it's not a sneaky way of doing 5 lots. It was basically going to be leaving the existing pond, which is stormwater from when it used to be Gray Fox Road, when he subdivided those 4 lines, and it connects over. I want to say on the other side of the road, there's some hard lines going to a ditch. So I don't believe that there's any intent to ever own or build homes on that section, because it's going to be continued to be part of the stormwater plan. I believe it was just the way that we were going to put it back on the original developer who's going to own that, and not going to be putting lot 3, be owning an existing stormwater pond, to a development from a 4. It's not a sneaky way to try to build. It was actually a way of trying to protect lot 3.
But the problem is that if it was sold to Deno, okay, then the stormwater for Gray Fox Drive was sold to another property with the contingency of that after the 4-lot subdivision, eventually there'd be another 2-lot subdivision of lot 3,
to give the developer back the stormwater for Great Fox Drive.
It's not a subdivision. It would be a boundary line agreement.
I understand that, Gary, but it's increasing a nonconformity to a boundary agreement, and you can't do that. The simplest thing to do would be just leave lot 3 alone and don't do the boundary adjustment.
Okay.
Because then it's a conforming lot, albeit that the lot 3 owner has got the stormwater, essentially, for Gray Fox on his or her property.
Okay, yeah. So I'm thinking the way we have it shown, if the boundary line agreement is not approved, then that is what will happen.
Yeah, well, if you submit that, I'll deny it. I will deny that boundary. It's not compliant.
Right. So that would be what it remains. Well, let me ask this. Is there something you would rather see? I mean, does the town want to take ownership of that?
You can offer it.
Gary.
Yes.
I guess what I would like to see, first of all, is this, I would like some kind of an explanation of whether this that's listed as an existing pond, is it a natural pond or is it a drainage pond for the subdivision? Does the stormwater from Gray Fox leave Gray Fox's property and go on to another parcel?
No, I think that pond goes deeper than the water elevation. At the groundwater elevation. So that pond, I mean, I've seen water there every time I've been out there. We did work out there before when we worked for the town. So, I mean, that's always had water in it as long as I've been involved. And it's just because I suspect if we went over and shot a grade over there, it would be the same elevation as we found the groundwater on lot 3.
Is that existing pond above the grade of Gray Fox Drive?
Above the grade? No.
When there is a stormwater event, does the stormwater from Gray Fox find its way to that pond and then out the pond to overflow to the culvert under 197?
I can't say for sure. I believe that some of it does, but I don't know if there's something on Gray Fox that may direct it some other way, most of the groundwater, most of the water from a storm, you know, from the road. So,
I guess I'm just really uncomfortable. We don't allow the town for stormwater to be handled on a parcel separate from the subdivision. It's just not.
I'm asking for a suggestion. I haven't seen something like this. Usually when like those plots were done on Gray Fox Drive, somebody would have said, you know, let's get that taken care of. But I suppose that was a different parcel though at the time.
Well, actually, when that was done with Gray Fox Drive, developer Gray Fox Drive still owned the parcel with the stormwater pond that went to the culvert at 197.
Right.
And the person that owned the development at that time is on the record, you know, a public record,
yep,
saying that the stormwater is handled through that pond that he owned and we continue to own, okay, that went out to.
Okay.
All right, so it was part and parcel of that development. Now, I don't know that we ever asked him to tie it into the development. But at the time that those 3 lots were subdivided, or 4 lots at Gray Fox Drive, the land that's now proposed to be developed by Denno was listed as remaining lands and still part of the housing development. But at this point, we're separating it from Gray Fox Drive housing development. Correct?
Yes, I guess. I mean, I don't know how they wouldn't have been able to attach it to Gray Fox Drive. I mean, he essentially sold a lot, right? if it was part of the subdivision before, he sold the lot, and I guess what we're trying to do is what was in his agreement then. If he was saying he was going to own it, then that's what we would do if we made the boundary line agreement. He would own it.
So if Mr. Condon still owns lot 3, then that's compliant with the previous notes. But if he sells lot 3, then you're asking us to, and it's the boundary line adjustment, you're asking us to allow a non-conforming lot.
I understand.
So that would have to go to the zoning board.
Right, and he does not own lot 3. They don't own this property. They don't have a contract on it, they own it.
No, he owns that little tiny parcel in the southeast corner that he's then going to take back ownership of the existing pond with a lot line adjustment in order to do that, form a non-compliant pond.
Right.
So I guess if we made this simple and easy, if we just completely ignored the future boundary line agreement, C05 on your site and that lot 3, and moved forward and handled that elsewhere as if that line wasn't there, because right now, that right. Contracting owns that property that has nothing to do with Great Fox Drive, nor am I trying to go back into the what happened to the Waterman. We are looking to move forward in the 5 acres that we owned and bought that does not have any, you know, showing what we had to do for Great Fox Drive. We're looking to go forward with our 5 acres that we own, and obviously here we are trying to do the right thing to put it back there, but doing that is creating issues, so let's ignore that line that says boundary line agreement.
So then at that point, I would have to ask Mr. Martin to look back into the site plan approvals for Great Fox Drive and the most recent subdivided lots there. This existing pond is actually part of the stormwater for Great Fox.
Let's look and see. Do you know what year that was, John?
Well, it's like 10 years ago.
It's 2015.
Okay. Hey, Bob, time flies. It wasn't 10 years. Seemed like 10 years ago.
Mark, was there maybe an easement retained by the owner before they conveyed this property for stormwater management in that pond?
Nothing that would have gotten, during the title review or the title search that showed that.
Okay.
So that would be obviously where we would be having to go back to is going back to our title company.
Yeah.
Well, the other place to check, Mark, is you want to look at your deeds and see if there's any easements or if there's any deed restrictions or anything like that, references to that pond in your deed. Any covenants?
Okay.
I mean, I guess I would say if somebody was looking for me to give a practical solution to it, I'd like to see if this is actually a stormwater pond. I would like to see it somehow attached to Great Fox Drive. Not to a building lot for lot 3. Those people don't have any reason to be managing the stormwater for another subdivision next door. Okay? Yeah. I appreciate Mr. Condon's effort to continue ownership of it, but at this point, once this property is developed, the only parcel he's going to continue to own as an entity is that stormwater pond and the ditch that goes out to the culvert under 197.
Mark, I'm not an attorney, but you're...
So I guess what would be the point, John, right now is Garden doesn't own any of it, with the exception of a small little lot that is landlocked. So this is that it's already happened, and no matter what we do, we cannot attach it back to the Great Fox Drive because all the lots that attach to this area and the development are already sold.
Well, what could occur is you could have a boundary adjustment to that lot. You could have a boundary adjustment to one of the lots on Great Fox Drive or one of the lots to the south on 197, but not that landlocked trapezoidal parcel. That's not going to work.
How could we do that? We don't own those properties. Nor does Garden.
Yeah, but those owners, if they wanted to adjust their boundary to accept this property, they could do that. Because they have a compliant lot. And you have a compliant situation in the end.
It'd just be a larger lot that has a pond on it. But I doubt they're going to want to do that.
Yeah, I don't think they would either. I mean, I guess we could ask.
You could ask. To me, the simple way to deal with this is leave it as part of lot three, and the extent that has a drainage function, that should be entered into the deed of lot three as an easement or a covenant to that effect. I'm not an attorney, but I think that would work. That would preserve the function of the pond as a drainage component. And
conversation with Gardner.
You know, instead of a conveyance, all you need is an easement.
So that's only one thing. So we then
the easement would go to who? The town?
No, go to Gardner.
Gardner.
Or his heirs, or whoever.
But Gardner doesn't own that now.
No, but
what
I'm saying is it might be a mechanism to preserve the function of that pond as a drainage. Because I can tell you, that does flow. Because it got backed up, there was blockages down the system on the other side of 197, and it started to back up all through this. They cleared the, DOT cleared the debris, and it started to flow again.
So I guess, the property was previously owned by the developer of Gray Fox, and it was considered part of the Gray Fox subdivision, still lands remaining. Then the sale went through. Okay, and at this point we now have, if this sale went through, we now have created a situation where the stormwater for Gray Fox is now leaving the Gray Fox subdivision and going to another private parcel. Okay, and eventually the goal was to transfer it back to Gardner, except in order to do that, we have to create a non-conforming lot. And Gardner will have, from what I can tell, no actual needed access to that stormwater system. So I guess, Jim, you have to look at maybe 2015 or the other Gray Fox development paperwork to see if this was an official part of the stormwater management system.
Yep. Well, yeah, that would reflect in if there was a stormwater plan done.
Exactly. And maybe there was, the original development in there, Gregory Manor, probably didn't have one. That was back in the 80s. Okay? But the Gray Fox Drive, I think that was handled in the site plan. It's the fact that was the official stormwater. He was clearing the ditch out because it got plugged in because one of the property owners adjacent to it had built the ditch with brush or whatever. It got cleared out and it solved some issues. And it was okay because it was still owned by Gardner, but now it's been sold to a separate entity that's not connected to the development. It's no longer part of Gray Fox. So we now have a stormwater system for a development that's been sold to another entity.
But that was my point, John. This is only one link in that overall system. You go across 197, there are many private owners that contribute to the operation of that drainage way. Not just this one individual private parcel.
Of course. So to the agents of Denham, if Denham was not here, your subdivision is not the problem. Okay, I don't want you to get the wrong idea. I actually like your plan here, and I think it's a nice use of that property. Unfortunately, that stormwater thing is a bit of an issue. And if we allow this to go forward as it is now, it becomes a bigger issue.
So I guess my question is if we eliminate that future boundary line agreement, like Jim says, and we leave it to lot three, which obviously when this is, approved and put, we are still going to own that, and it's going to have to be listed out in the deeds that is there. We're not looking to disturb the existing pond. We're not looking to change the pond. All of our storm waters for lot 1, 2, 3, and 4, to my understanding, look at it, with the exception of maybe lot three, have nothing to do with it. I guess I would be looking to say, with the exception of those words in there, ignore that line and that, and we're still looking to move forward. We're still going to own the lot that's attached to it, and nothing's changing.
Okay, so let's go forward from there. At that point, you now have, you've eliminated the non-conforming lot. Okay?
Correct.
If you go with access agreement that allows Gardner Common to access that stormwater system for maintenance, you've now limited the difficulty of maintaining the stormwater. That still leaves us with we're now handling the stormwater for a subdivision on another property.
Which we're already doing, because we already own it.
But I'm not sure that was something that should have been sold. I'm not sure that the stormwater from Gregory Manor and Great Box Drive can be sold to another entity. I'm not trying to be a jerk here. I'm just trying to make sure we're complying with the code.
Is Great Box Drive a town road? Was that the exit to the town?
Yes. That was a town road.
Okay, so Gardner, he would actually fit into it, because it's runoff coming from the town right away. I'm not sure.
Gary, because at the time that we did Great Fox Drive, I'm not sure if you were involved with the town. I don't know if you were involved with that subdivision. When those lots were subdivided, we were sure that the existing stormwater pond was still part of the subdivision, because the lands remaining between those lots on Great Fox Drive and 197 were still owned by Gardner Common and were part of Gregory Manor and the stormwater system. But now it's sold, so it's no longer owned by or part of. So this is where it's become a dilemma. The sale of it became a dilemma right there.
Right.
Once again, to Mr. Denno, I want to say I like the subdivision as you proposed it, except now I don't know what to do with the stormwater from Gregory Manor.
Now,
I still think, and maybe, Mark, you should approach an attorney. I still think this can be handled with an easement and a covenant that restricts development over that pond to the benefit of the people in Great Box.
The benefit of the town, right?
Okay. You know, that's for an attorney to look at, but I think you can keep the drainage system working by virtue of an easement and a covenant, I think.
Hey, Jim?
Yep.
What if lot 3 is conveyed to Gardner?
I mean, we can't get hung up on an individual, John, because obviously Gardner Fennell is going to be here. So it's got to be the conveyance of the function. You know, and preservation of the function, not to whatever person.
Can the easement to the pond be the pond overflow? Because I do want to say, I believe the pond overflow right away is 40 feet.
So therefore,
it would not be creating a landlocked thing, because I believe that right away, and if you guys drive down the road now, there's that wooden section. I believe that that's why that's there, and I believe it's 44. Why? Or is it right away?
I don't think
that's 40. That's not 40 feet wide. This is a 40 scale. That would be 1 inch wide for 12 feet wide.
Yes. Yeah.
Not only that, but I don't think you can access that from that overflow. I just don't. It's too wet.
I'm telling you, I think that the solution here is to keep it for lot 3 and try and deal with that with an easement and a covenant.
Okay.
I think we know what we have to do. So we'll.
See, I want to be clear here. This was a mess that was left by the Great Fox subdivision. And now we're trying to clean it up.
Okay, nice question.
And that's what happens when... Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. When the... John, you may be able to help us. When the
Gray Fox subdivision was done, he said that this 5-acre lot was listed as remaining land. Were those considered part of the Gray Fox subdivision?
At the time that the four lots on Gray Fox Drive were subdivided, I asked, what about this other land? And it said that it was remaining land. I said, wouldn't that make it 5 lots? No, it's just remaining lands to be developed. And I asked specifically if the pond should not have an access to Gray Fox Drive so that it could be accessed through the development and maintain or connect to the road in the development and still be part of the development in the future, even if the lot out by 197 was sold. And it would be handled when it was sold, and that it would always remain. It's just...
Okay, hang on. Just don't... that part is clear. So, if I'm just trying to understand. If that remaining land, if the developer of this was the same person as had done Gray Fox Drive, would you think we would still be in a situation if Lot 3 kept the pond on it?
Not as long as as long as it was still connected to Gregory Manor, no.
Right. So I guess that's the question. Is this not?
But I don't know how to do that, because there's no access to Gray Fox Drive and there's no access to 197. So I guess the only way I saw it is if there was a 50-foot access from Reynolds Road around Lot 3 to that, then you've got a conforming lot. Or if Lot 3 just remains with the pond and becomes part of the stormwater management for Gray Fox into the future. And it seems like that's a lot of extra land to commit just to get access to the pond. So I'm leaning more towards Jim's thing that there needs to be at least some kind of access, and then there needs to be something from the zoning board that will allow that non-complying lot. Well, no, I guess it wouldn't. If access is deemed okay, then the lot can own it, but you're still talking about a separate owner owning stormwater for development.
Okay, and that's why I say there's got to be preservation of the stormwater function.
I understand. Yeah, that's what I want to understand, though, is
and that could be done by an easement or a covenant, I believe. I think this is something for an attorney to address, and I think the applicant has got to employ the services of a good land use attorney and try and get to the bottom of this.
I think I agree with you on that, Jim. I think that's the best tack forward. I'm not opposed to seeing this property developed, and I like the plan as it's sitting right now, that we've got to find some way to deal with that stormwater from Gregory Manor again. We tried to do it in 2015, and now we have to do it again, and this will probably be the last one, because I don't see a lot of motion forward on anything else here.
This is going to be it, but I guess, like I said, speaking of counsel, I guess, if this isn't on my feet, or on the business's deed, and this isn't conveyed anywhere else, how is this becoming the burden of somebody that's trying to develop it? It sounds like some ball was dropped years ago, not planning this out. How does that now fall on the new owner if it's not specifically laid out in the deed? And I have no problem going forward and getting a land attorney in, getting into this, but I just want to make sure who's it going to come back on. Is this a town oversight, or is this, especially if it's not in a deed, and it wasn't in any minutes?
No, it's in the minutes, but I don't know if it's not.
Again, if it's in the minutes, I hope that it was in the motion.
So what you're saying is, I agree with you that if there was nothing that put a deed restriction on these other 5 acres to say that this land cannot be conveyed, you may have a point.
Okay.
I still think Jim's right. The best way forward is to make sure there's a conveyance to allow access to that so that it can be maintained.
And I think that's where our approach is. We're not trying to hide the fact. That's why we thought that this was going to be the best way of putting it back through onto the parcel of land. I thought that if that pond overflow was a 40-foot right of way, I never knew that it had to be an accessible 40-foot right of way, because I live on a 40-foot right of way that there's no way you can be accessible to it. So I guess my understanding when we were drawing this was we were always going to have the access from 197 onto the existing pond. It's going to get attached to garbage deep. We're doing the right thing. It's attached to the original developer who now has it, and we're clearing off any future homeowners to not have the issues that I've been kind of dealing with right now.
It's a 50-foot right-of-way.
Okay. Again, I'm not sure what that right-of-way is, and obviously if that's the scale map, then clearly it's not 50 feet. So I guess could we move forward from that so that I don't waste maybe a month's meeting and just the rest of the map? Is there anything else that you would like to see on the map, knowing that what we need to do with this pond is kind of in the hands of council at this time?
What about the driveway, Jim?
Well, we've gotten told we have as a matter of approach, a fairly standardized process for dealing with these things. We like to see a maintenance and access agreement, you know, for each lot. It goes with each lot. And then the deeds for each lot have to properly convey the right of access across properties to make sure this driveway will function, you know, properly going forward. That's the best we can do.
But the driveway...
That's what we did with McKenna, and it worked out well.
We did with McKenna, too. We also built a road to, or the driveways to, I believe, almost town specifications on a road, so we get emergency vehicles back there.
Yeah, we had a, they had to be built to accommodate the heavier vehicle.
So, you know, we need to get that here somewhere, and also get the emergency approval, make sure these roads are wide enough. Didn't we say 20 feet last time? I think he's only got 15 here. I think we need to go 20. Am I correct in saying that? Do you remember, Jen?
You are correct in saying that.
Okay. So if we can get that.
We'll widen that to the whole way being rolled.
Yeah, and what we want to see, and you got this, let's start over here, a cross-section detail on the construction of the driveway so it meets that specification. I think you got the start of it here.
I think it was the town road spec, so we put a heavy, like our ladder trucks back there or something like that, Gary?
Right, well, whatever specification it is, so it can support the heavier vehicle even in the spring.
Right.
Yeah, when I talked to the fire chief, he was saying that that what we had before was good. This is a little shorter than it was before.
Yeah.
But still, the intent is that there would be a turnaround there for the fire trucks. Okay. And I hope that can talk to him again, but he was good with it before. So, but let me go back and talk to him.
And before we had the access and maintenance agreement, and the deed language for the easement access and all that was prepared, and the town attorney looked at it before the board signed off.
Correct.
Which we do have the agreement that we've used in the past for multiple lots. The one thing that's an issue is that each of the driveways, I mean, I've shown a layout on the lot, but that the easement would be, it would move depending upon where those driveways are. So, you know, it's to have it, I mean, it's not like you can say it's going to be right here or something. I think we covered that in the agreement that we had, and that was done by an attorney. We've used it probably four or five times before. So I guess that's what we're looking to do.
Well, as you get through the process here, further and further, you should have a very, you should be able to narrow that down pretty good to where those driveways are going to cut here.
To the center one?
Yeah, to each individual lot. You should have a pretty good idea where those driveways are going to go.
Well, I mean, we're showing house locations, but when he sells the lot, I mean, he's not going to build spec homes there. He's going to sell the lots, and somebody could decide that, like at lot four, that their house, they want their house to look toward the road, and that their garage would be up behind it. If they had one, maybe it'd be attached, maybe it'd be underneath. I don't know. But I don't know how we could make an exact location now until, you know, it's some point the lot is sold.
I understand that.
That's understood. I just want to make sure that we, I just want to make sure, Gary, that when the buyer goes in, he understands that he's sharing a driveway. And they have to understand that they have to share the maintenance. This all has to be clearly understood. Buyer beware.
And we have a note on the plan on sheet one there that says that number two, they do have the agreement. They'll get the agreement with the sale.
The same thing we did with Ken.
Guys, so a little quick to understand you in the room, voice wise. Was somebody talking about the width of this shared driveway only being 15 feet wide?
Right. We're gonna expand the whole width of the 20 feet to
Okay, good.
That's the road section.
That's a good idea. I mean, the driveway is going to lots on half.
Right.
But the common one, you can't get two vehicles past each other on 15 feet. So, be bright, Keith. You're going to snug.
I just say, I think you can, but that's...
It's going to be close. And probably
for the fire department, though. Yeah, right. The requirement for the fire department is 20 feet. So we'll expand that to 20 feet.
So are you going to be selling for preliminary then next time?
That's what we would like to do. I mean, I think we've got everything else shown. I think we've done pretty much everything that we need to do. I mean, the time's a little glitch, and we'll try to figure something out. But yeah, we'd like to submit for preliminary next time, and if we could get a public hearing, that would be great.
Mark, this is Ann. Can you also show the adjoining landowners?
We have a survey. I think we submitted the survey previously in our first submission. But there is a survey, and I will submit that this coming time.
That's why I stressed preliminary, Gary, because the submission requirements for preliminary are much more stringent than they are sketch plan.
Yes, I'm aware.
Yep. And the last time this was in front of us, I asked about that little sliver of land behind lots 1 and 2. That doesn't meet the road and it's weird shaped, and if that was a glitch, or if that's owned by somebody, or what the deal is with that, whether that's like surveys, two different surveys show two different lines, or what. Is that something that you make sure is cleared up for the next map?
Yes. It does show on the subdivision map that I have there's a piece of it that was going to be conveyed one way or the other. And it is on a tax map, so we'll make sure we can put it on all the maps if you want. We try to, it just gets busy if we, you know, put it on everything. That's why we're going to use it.
So I just want to try to do, Gary, and say, okay, this is probably a conclusion on this parcel, and I was just hoping to clean that up in the conclusion of the site plan, so it's all taken care of. So that's all. That's not a requirement, it's just a request.
Yep, okay.
Anything else for it? Okay. Terrence, is there anything else from the applicant?
I can't think of anything.
Okay. Thank you, Gary. Well, we'll look forward to seeing the preliminary application.
Are we going to, can we schedule a public hearing for next month?
No. We got to go through the preliminary application first. Review. Unless the board wanted to waive the requirement, but based on everything that we've been talking about tonight,
I think we need to be clear what's going on with lot 3 before we can go to public hearing.
I agree.
And that doesn't have to take a lot of time or effort. I mean, it's really just a matter of coming to some kind of conclusion of how we move forward with it.
I'm still very unclear at what you're thinking we could do that would be good, that would be better.
Well, I think, Gary, in my opinion, I think if you want to create a non-conforming lot with no road frontage, you have to go in front of the zoning board and get okay for that.
Oh, no, and that's what we're saying. We won't do that. We'll take that line out. We won't do that. It'll be part of lot
2. So if you want to keep it as part of lot 3, okay, then there's the issue of easement, and as Jim is saying, you know, continued use as stormwater. Okay? Which means some way for somebody to get in there and have a right of way to go do that. Okay? Which wouldn't be much. You know, let's face it, nobody's going to be in there every week mowing anything. Okay?
John?
And that's
John?
Cool. That's cool.
John?
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Just if I may, I think the board has expressed its concern. I don't think the board should be in the position of making that type of a recommendation. We have expressed a concern that there's an issue with this stormwater. There's some research that needs to be done. I think that I understand the applicant saying that they're struggling for what would be a better answer. I don't think it's the board's role to provide that answer.
I'll agree with you, Jerry, on that one.
I think the next step is a preliminary review, and we take it from there. Unless the board wants to do something to expedite that process, and again, that would require some motions and discussion. And if anyone wants to make a motion, I can listen and we can vote. So does anyone want to make a motion in regards to anything to do with this tonight? Okay, hearing none, I guess we're moving forward towards preliminary.
Okay, we'll see you next month.
Okay.
Thank you,
everybody.
Thank you.
Okay. And as the storm rolls in,
so does the judge. Got an arraignment, so when you guys clear, we got one coming up from Albany right now. I feel bad for that trooper. It's nasty, boys. It's getting really bad out there. It's really vicious out there right now. Hey, Larry, how are you doing?
Good.
Good to see you. Yeah, it's getting really bad. So when you go back out there, they're expecting hail and everything else. So just let you know. When you walk outside, it's going to turn into a shit storm out there.
So that's right. All right, well, then last but not least tonight on the agenda.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I didn't realize you were still on.
Yeah,
we're still there.
Yeah.
Apologize. Sorry, guys.
Next up is Hoffman's Car Wash, Route 9, for a site plan review. We have someone from Hoffman's. We are ready to listen.
Gavin, are you there?
Yes, I am. Gavin Beal with Environmental Design. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. With me this evening also is Marty Andrews and Tom Hoffman. So hopefully you can unmute them as well.
Yep. Yeah.
Welcome, John.
Okay. Great. Everybody's here. Well, we'll try to move pretty quick here because I know it's I'm down in Burn Hills and we're starting to get some lightning here as well. So everybody hopefully will get back safe. Okay, so I'll just do for tonight. We're just doing a sketch plan. This is our first presentation to the planning board, so I'll just kind of go through the elements within the proposal that we feel are important to show the board at this point. Starting out with the original application that we just submitted, we're here proposing a 6,400 square foot automated car wash on 1.65 acres. The property, I think most of the board should be familiar with. It was recently subdivided as part of the Auto World property. The subdivision was filed and everything's been taken care of as far as the creation of the parcel that we would be developing. The only leftover item that I know was discussed during the subdivision was the removal of the existing structure. As you know, there are two structures related to this original parcel. The larger Auto World Suzuki building would be still remaining, however, the older commercial building on the eastern side of the property is slated for removal. I think Marty may have some other information, but I do believe the property owner is scheduled to remove that building within the next couple of weeks. So you're all familiar with the site. Probably over 50% of the site was developed. Nothing would remain as part of this proposal. We would remove not only the building, but all the existing asphalt and any other smaller buildings or utilities that are on the site. The new site plan that you have in front of you shows a automated car wash approximately 85 feet, located 85 feet from the Route 9 right-of-way. We're at the intersection, as everyone knows, with Reynolds Road and Route 9, which is a fully signalized intersection. To gain access to the property, we would be completely removing the existing driveway that comes off the Auto World parcel, and we would be replacing it with a three-lane access road built in the idea that future town road may exist along the right-of-way that's currently shown on the subdivision. So we will be submitting tonight to DOT. We haven't spoke to DOT yet. We obviously know they'll be a big player as part of how this access road will be ultimately designed. And so we will be submitting plans to DOT to get their input very early on after our meeting here tonight. But once we get onto the new town road section, again, we would have three lanes. There would be two exiting lanes and one entering lane. Then we would proceed with proposing the new driveway into this portion of the parcel, approximately 115 feet from the intersection. Again, where we've been talking to Jim Martin about trying to get this entrance and exit into our site as far away from the intersection as possible, in order to provide additional stacking if needed in the future. Once visitors get to the property, they would then be directed towards the automated tellers. Those are the small islands on the eastern portion of the property, the eastern side of the building. So someone entering would immediately queue in one of those lanes, go through the tellers, and then once through the tellers, they get funneled into a single queuing lane that enters on the north side of the building. So the north side is the actual entrance into the car wash, the south side is the exit portion of the building. Other identified features on the site plan that you've probably seen on other Hoffman car wash sites would be the vacuum stations. Those would be the double-loaded parking area that's immediately to the western side of the building. And towards the rear, we would also be proposing separate employee parking as well as a trash enclosure, again, towards the back of the property where they would be screened, obviously, at that location. As far as landscaping, you're very familiar with it. Again, this is just a quick rendering of some of the initial thoughts of how we would landscape the property. Hoffman Development prides themselves in the way that they present their properties. I can tell you from past experiences as a landscape architect, they really do a very nice job with not only providing the original plantings, but maintaining it and making it really look
contractor. So, with regards to the overall parking, again, if you add up all the parking spaces, both the vacuum and the employee parking, we would have a total of 26 parking spaces. Sewer and water is currently available on Route 9, or will be available on Route 9. We would be making a gravity connection to the sewer, as well as a new water service to the car wash. I think that's pretty much all I really wanted to present for tonight. Obviously, we're all here to answer any questions. Certainly, Marty or Tom can tell you a little bit about the operations as far as the new automated tellers that we've been installing on all their facilities, and also help you out with any questions that you have regarding to hours of operation, things of that nature.
Okay. Board, questions?
How much water do you use on a day, on an average day?
We use approximately 40 gallons of fresh water per car. We do have a recycling system that can process 160 gallons a minute. We use that primarily to flush the lower part of the car to remove any heavy stain and grit before the foam friction material touches the vehicle.
Okay, so when you recycle whatever you recycle, when you dispose of whatever you got to get out of the water, that's going to go in the sewer system?
Right. It's capable of removing down to 5 microns using a cyclone. So it spins all the heavy solids out, and they drop out to the bottom and return to the same settlement tank.
Okay, so on an average day, do you have a minimum or a maximum that in other words, how many cars can you go through there on a day?
Well, we try to watch as many as 100 or so cars an hour. So, you know, it would be, you know, 100 times 40 times, you know, our hours of operation, which typically run between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. In the summertime, and 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. in the wintertime. We do open at 7:30 on Saturdays. We open a hair earlier.
So you're looking at 40,000 gallons an hour?
A day. Yep.
You put how many cars can you put through in an hour?
100.
Yeah, 40 gallons. So it'd be 4,000 gallons 4, 000, an hour.
4,000 an hour. Okay.
About 12 hours. So about 48.
Yeah, 50,000 a day. I was just looking to see what the strain would be on the water system. And certainly good to flush the sewer system. That's a good thing.
Well, the other thing that happens in the car wash industry is when communities allow commercial car washes, you know, all of our water is recycled, 100% of it, to municipal, you know, treatment plants. And, you know, it also reduces the amount of water people use in the driveway washing their cars themselves, which is, you know, about 10 gallons a minute. And that, you know, goes down the driveway in storm drains, untreated in streams and rivers, and it, you know, it's a source of pollution. So, you know, a professional car wash, you know, helps recycle 100% of the water and removes, you know, pollution from streams and rivers. So, but that's the real benefit to a community.
I'm a big environmental guy. I like that answer.
Well, it sounds like he's answered that question before.
Just a couple of times.
Yeah. And the only other question I have is the entranceway. Is that going to become a town road? Do we need to do that before they can get a building permit?
Yeah, now, in the early discussions, speaking to one of the members in our office that was involved in the subdivision, was that this would just be a private road to begin with, but it would be designed to town specs, so that way, once more people come on board to this or connect to this new road system, eventually it would become a town road. But for now, it would be just private.
Well, can we do that, Jim? Allow an entrance way on private? Okay.
Yeah, it's like a super private driveway.
Okay.
But then DOT is going to have a lot to say about this too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Right. Because of the intersection.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much.
Believe it or not, I only have one question.
Oh, no.
You guys run really nice car washes, and I know you've done this for years, so I'm sure you have a really great answer to this, but it seems to me that the only issue I see is traffic flow at the exit of the car wash and the cars coming in to get into the car wash. You guys going to have lineage on the pavement there that directs traffic, or...
You know, we usually have, like, when the customer is exiting out of the building, there's going to be a sign right in front of them that will direct them moving to the right. And I'm sure we can add driveway striping also where we have an arrow.
Okay, just so that, you know, people don't think he exits the entrance and drive right up to it and that kind of thing. I assume you had things to do that because you run these all over the place, so I'm sure you've had that experience. The question I had is, carry on from Mike's previous question. I'm okay with private road slash drive to access your site. I'm just wondering who's going to own that drive since it's not on the property that you own. Is that going to be owned by the property owner, or is it owned by you with an easement over the property, the other properties, right away?
I'm pretty sure the arrangement was that the original property owner would still own that and we would have an easement, correct?
That is correct. You hear me?
But it's your road. And you have an easement to use it on his property.
That is correct.
Okay. I'm okay with that. I just wondered what it was. I wanted to make sure we understood it. So. Otherwise, I think this looks like a very nice project.
Just a quick question. Is the rendering, the second sheet we had, the elevation, the artist conceptual, is that the building style that you're intending to build?
This exact building we just completed in December on Route 7, basically just past the Albany County Airport runway. Kitty Corner and Goldstein for Cuba Motor Park.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I've been through that car wash. Okay.
And also in the city of Saratoga on the border of Baldwin Spot on the south side of Saratoga.
I believe that would be.
That's another very, very similar building.
Good. Okay.
That's just very, that's a nice, if that's the way it looks, that's a nice one.
Yeah. And also, did you say your hours of operation were you thought would be 8 to 8? In the summer at 8 to 7 p.m. in the winter? Was that what you were thinking?
Right, and I should say, too, that the self-serve vacuums are closed down when we're not open. So,
yeah.
They are not 24-7 operation.
Okay, and you've got a copy of the staff notes from Jim?
Yes, we did.
Okay, and there was some issues in there, you know, about just more information, Wilma, on the lighting.
Yes, we would be providing all that information with the detailed plans.
Right. So you've got that. I mean, I don't know, did anybody else have anything to add to that?
Is he going to need approval from Jesse on that for the water?
Yes. Yep. Matter of fact, I think I talked to Jesse about this a little bit. He's our water superintendent, if you haven't talked to him yet. He said there's an existing line that's there that probably needs to be taken out and reestablished.
Yeah, that's what we were anticipating.
Yep. So you're anticipating a more detailed submission although we don't have a phased review process here per se, but we will have a more detailed plan as we get closer to public hearing and things, correct?
Correct.
Do you have any questions of us?
I don't believe we do. Tom, you're all set?
Let's just get that sewer line installed, guys.
That's above our pay grade here.
Yeah.
I've dug all the ditches I'm going to dig.
I'm all done. I wasted that 9 years ago.
No, right. I think we're all set.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Does anyone else on the board have anything else they'd like to ask them?
Well, I'll just echo
Gary's comments that the staff notes are very important for the applicant to consider. And one I might highlight is going to be the traffic considerations and how peak hour traffic is going to be affected, I think, is going to be very important.
Yes, we'll be using BHP traffic engineering. They'll provide a short narrative on not only that, but also the final design. They will be assisting us with the final design, with working with DOT on the new driveway.
Yep, the nice thing about a car wash, too, is the peak traffic morning drive time is when car washes are slow, and nighttime drive, we're also slower. We peak in the middle of the day when you know, drive time traffic is the lightest on that road, so it kind of works out great for us.
Good. All right, if there's no other comments, I'll say we'll look forward to you at the preliminary review as well, and we'll continue on.
Okay. Thank you. Well, we're all set. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anyone on the board have anything further that need to be addressed tonight?
Make a motion to adjourn.
All right. Motion to adjourn from Mike. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All right, folks. Okay. See you in July in person.
Good night, everybody.
Aye.
The recording has stopped.
Yeah.